This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by our Patreon at patreon.com/frogpants. Support Current Geek and other shows on the network by showing a little bit of change each month. That's patreon.com/frogpants.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek! Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world, and you. Well, that gavel will be important later. To keep you current on all things that matter most, I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Scott Johnson. You know, this is our last Current Geek of 2014.
I know. We won't be back until Friday the 2nd. Actually, we haven't even talked. Maybe that day will work. I don't know.
Won't be back till January.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. 2015 will be here.
We made it.
Yeah, 1 year,
of
dude.
The 52 weeks, we've almost done 37 episodes.
That's right. We will be, sometime in January will be our anniversary. We should celebrate in some way.
We should.
Right?
We should take ourselves out to a nice dinner.
Okay, a steak. That sounds lovely. As always, this is the year-long tradition on this show. We come on Fridays and we bring guests with us. I would like to welcome to the program one Logan Decker, former PC Gamer magazine editor. A man about town, a fantastic human being, Logan. Welcome
God,
to the show.
I love it. Keep it coming. It's like if only there was a spigot and I could turn that kind of thing on and hear it all day.
Oh, I'm telling you, man. It's really good to have you on. I feel like we should have done this a while ago. So thank you
Delighted to be here. Last year I left PC Gamer to join a firm called Dialect as editorial director, but I decided to take a 6-month sabbatical.
Wow.
So I'm as happy as a clam right now.
Six months. Where did
that actually come from? Were clams generally happy? did we poll them? Or
they just got that smirk on their
face. They do have a smirk
all the time.
Yeah, like they got a pearl in
like
their mouth.
Better than you.
Sure.
Yeah, and they're like all like living rent free at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
Like all that.
Get a job, clams.
Seriously, no wonder they're happy because they're moochers.
Yeah. They also the phrase clam up came from them. So clam up, clams.
Yeah.
Also with us, Eric Franklin, section editor at CNET, all around technical mastermind. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me, both you and Tom. I'm huge fans. Huge fan of Scott Johnson. Been listening to the Incense for like forever, it seems. Still listen to it, even though I don't play WoW as much anymore.
I did not know this. This is all news to me, Tom. Tom been holding back. I didn't realize you were an Incense listener. That's amazing.
Dude, yeah, I've been listening since very, very early on, before the days of Randy.
Whoa, like the old Andrew days. That's some time ago, man. Woo.
Yeah.
Let's just look back to January of 2006. That's when that would have been. Crazy. All right. Wow. Well, now that I know that, I'm much more relaxed because I'm a huge fan of your work. And I was a little stressed. I'm like, is Eric going to even want to hang around on here? He's like, better than I am. But now he's here. We're all in the same pie. We've all enjoyed one another's work. I don't know what that pie reference is at all.
Yeah, are we swimming in the pie? What kind of pie is
it? I don't know, man.
Who served pie?
Nobody.
I don't know if I know you guys that well to be in the same
right? I just leaped right to the end.
We'll see how we're doing at the end of the podcast. But it's good to be here. We've got a bunch of topics to get through. Tom, let's start it off with this.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Take it away, sir.
Well, if you're not up on the Sony story, where you been? Here's a recap. James Franco and Seth Rogen made a little comedy movie called The Interview, in which their characters try to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Then a group called the Guardians of Peace claimed responsibility for a devastating computer attack against Sony Pictures Entertainment, the studio behind The Interview. They leaked corporate emails, wiped out computer data. It was a nasty attack. Emails from people claiming to be those same Guardians of Peace eventually, not right away, but eventually said the attack was in retribution for the movie and made some vague threats. After that, all the major theater chains in the United States pulled the movie and Sony pulled the plug on the rest of the distribution because there pretty much weren't any theaters left going to show it, adding that they had no other plans to distribute it at that time, which brings us to today. First, the FBI starts us out by officially accusing North Korea of carrying out the attack against Sony Pictures Entertainment. Then the president of the United States called Sony's decision to pull the movie a mistake, saying he was sympathetic to the situation, but that, quote, we cannot have a society in which some dictator someplace can start imposing censorship here in the United States. Oh, and he also said the U.S. would respond to the attack, but he did not elaborate. Mm. Then Sony Entertainment CEO Michael Linton said that Sony had contacted a senior advisor at the White House. He also pointed out that it was theater owners who pulled the movie. And then in an emailed statement to several outlets, Sony said, let us be clear. The only decision that we have made with respect to the release of the film was not to release it on Christmas Day in theaters after the theater owners declined to show it. Without theaters, we could not release it in the theaters on Christmas Day. We had no choice. After that decision, we immediately began actively surveying alternatives to enable us to release the movie on a different platform. It is still our hope that anyone who wants to see this movie will get the opportunity to do so. And Linton said to CNN that he has not been approached by any online video on demand or streaming distributor about taking on the interview. So that's where we are today.
All right. So that brings us to current. I just have this question to ask, and then we should all bounce around whatever our thoughts are here. But if they are now saying we're open to some sort of digital distribution for the film because none of the other avenues are going to work for them, first of all, I wonder why they're declining DVD or Blu-ray. But forgetting about that, forgetting about the brick and mortar option, who really wants to tackle this and have the exposure? And in a lot of ways, because we're dealing with a non-government entity here in Sony and in other, you know, entertainment companies who might all have terrible security as well, who would want to touch this with a 10-foot pole? Like, I don't see even Netflix or anybody that big coming out and saying, yeah, we'll take your movie, because essentially that's tantamount to them saying, oh, and go ahead and attack us and let's see how our security holds up under scrutiny. And maybe they all just kind of know that all their security sucks and they're just going to get nailed. So thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's like who do you choose? And I think Linton brought that up in an interview. He was like, we're actually kind of having trouble getting someone to actually stream this movie or to, you know, to go in partnership with us. And, you know, rightly so, when Sony has, you know, this has been a kind of a devastating attack for them. It's going to, you know, I don't know who's going to take to actually agree to go into partnership with Sony to show this movie. It seems like a risky proposition for anyone.
It does. And then you just leave yourself open to scrutiny and criticism that you caved just like everybody else did and that you couldn't stand up to it and you wimped out and this is how the terrorists win. And people make, you know, they want to make a corporation seem like a government and somehow this is some crazy conspiracy. Logan,
well,
your thoughts?
I mean, it's kind of... Go ahead, Logan.
No, please. Well, I was just thinking that, you know, I'm trying to see this from Sony's perspective and also trying to keep in mind that Sony is a Japanese corporation, right? It is a multinational corporation. Japan has a crazy neighbor in North Korea, one that has killed, you know, as recently as 2010, as I can remember, sunk a South Korean sub with 63 people aboard it. This is an insane country. And if you've got an insane neighbor who, you know, putting, let's say, a bathtub duck on the lawn, sets him off, and you say, you know what, I don't think I'm going to put that bathtub duck out there because I'm tired of dealing with this crap. You know, I can be somewhat sympathetic to that. But overall, I got to say, it's not that I don't get the issues, but I really don't care. It is a movie, you know what I mean? And it's a corporation, and I don't necessarily want corporations defending free speech rights, you know? Mm-hmm. What did I just say? Free speech?
Free speech rights.
Yeah, like, you've got the freedom to say whatever you want, Logan.
It's like a compliment to sriracha, you know? It's a delicious condiment.
It sounds lovely, yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I don't really care what they do because it's a movie and it seems really trivial to me, even though I get... You know, that it's a matter of censorship. It's a matter of statecraft. There are all these other issues involved. But it is, at the end of the day, just a movie. And if it disappears, that's not something I'm too worried about. I would be very concerned if we stopped publishing books like the one, oh, gosh, I wish I could remember the title of it, but a North Korean defector. He was the only defector so far who's actually raised in the prison camps of North Korea, and you read that book and it's horrifying. Mm. Absolutely horrifying. That's the kind of thing that, you know, I'm not saying that I wouldn't criticize George Clooney for his statement today, you know, saying that this is cowardice on Sony's behalf and all that, but he's got a professional and creative stake in it. Mm. But as for me, average person, I really don't care that much.
Well, you don't care now, but let's say, let's just jump ahead.
Right.
Let's say the precedence is set. And this is devil advocate here. I don't really know that this goes.
Absolutely.
But let's say as the years go on, it then becomes a stifling power for anybody trying to do something more creative than, say, a safe superhero movie or another Transformers movie where no one will be offended by anything except those seeing it. But I
would say to that, that probably happened 50 years ago and we're there now. Mm. And it's not, you know, Sony, giant, you know, film companies are probably not the ones to look for when it comes to really challenging material like this. That's not to say that they don't. And I'm actually, you know, impressed by the quality of films that giant studio productions make every year. It's amazing. It just blows my mind. But people are making those films and they may not come from giant studios and they may not star James Franco and Seth Rogen. Mm. So that doesn't really bother me too much.
Yeah. What happens though when a documentary, say, about like the Square, about the Egyptian Revolution, causes some hacker group somewhere to decide that they want to attack Netflix until Netflix pulls that movie from their distribution? I think that's the kind of precedent people might be worried would happen.
Absolutely. And I totally get that concern. And I 100% agree. It's just in terms of the temperature at which I sort of regard this incident, it's fairly low for me. But I do agree, as a precedent, it is horrifying.
Mm.
So I honestly feel like this was kind of a no-win situation for Sony because let's say that they actually did release the movie. And let's say, God forbid, something did happen. Everyone on the internet, everyone everywhere would be coming down on Sony saying they were a money-grubbing company that was just looking at dollars and they couldn't just, you know, take one for the team and not release the movie. And now people are dead or whatever or hurt.
Absolutely.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it's kind of, they were kind of putting a rock in a hard place. And I have to agree, I don't necessarily agree with the president on this because I think that if you look at the path of events or the sequence of events, you know, theater owners did pull the movie first before Sony made that decision, at least, you know, from the outside perspective, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So I do think they were put in a really, really awkward environment.
Well, yeah, I mean, Sony's not wrong. And I think that gets lost a lot, which is Sony told the theater owners, look, when this threat came through, a lot of people are like, it's not a credible threat. It should be ignored. The theater owners decided, you know, AMC, Cinemark, all of the major theater owners decided, you know what? We don't care if it's credible or not. At this point, we're going to get pressure from the parents of the kids who work in our theater chains. We're going to get pressure from local groups who just think it's unsafe. And we risk imitators, people who actually aren't related to that movie, using it as an excuse. And they said, forget it. We're not going to show it. And it was a domino effect. It started in the morning with one of the chains, and I can't remember which one went first. And then all the rest of them said, well, if you're not doing it, I'm not doing it either. And at the end, Sony's like, well, we're not releasing it because there's nowhere to release it to.
Yeah.
You know, there were a handful of theaters across the country that would still show it. But at that point, it didn't make financial sense. You couldn't pay to distribute it to that few of a number of theaters.
Well, plus it's easy to latch on to the narrative that Sony's the big dumb corporation who had terrible security and now all their dirty secrets are out. Oh, and also now they've backed down because they're wimps and the bottom line is more important than artistic integrity. And it's so easy to latch on to that narrative. But I don't know that that's the narrative at all. I think the narrative is
I think when they followed up that with saying, and we have no plans to distribute it in any other way, that's when everyone said, oh, so you're giving up.
Yeah.
Like that's right. If they had said, we are still considering our options, then everyone would have said, oh, okay, well, maybe they'll release it online. But I really do think that Sony just didn't want to fan the flames at that point. So if you're going to accuse him of anything, I think that's the thing to call him on.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. And, you know, it does strike this note of justice in that we are all talking about it now. Yeah. Everybody is talking about it. The president of the United States is talking about it. Yeah. And how much more fitting could it be? You don't even need an act of defiance. It's out there now and everybody knows. And it's, you know, further humiliated a crazy, you know, dictator.
Yeah. It's also got, well, as much as he's dictating, I'm not even sure he's dictating all that much.
Yeah, that's true.
I always wonder who's actually talking over there, but or how much these guys are represented by them or any of those things. But what's really weird to me, or the thing that keeps coming back to me, is this is the number one biggest story really of the month. and it's huge and it's going to last a while and the impact is still not quite known. And at the end of the day, we are talking about movies and entertainment as a product. And I don't want to diminish that as a viable product. It certainly is one of our great exports. But this is tantamount to, you know, a giant cheese controversy in I can't think of who has a lot of cheese.
France.
Wisconsin, sure. Or
is that
or,
a cheesy state? I didn't know that. Wow. Okay.
Or like, you know, I don't know. You know, let's go back into the 20s and some vaudeville act demanding all the headlines in the nation, and somehow that was so felt so important. Yet here we are at a time in 2014 when really we are just so tied to entertainment businesses and everything's so connected. Yeah. And it's just getting bigger as the internet allows for more and has greater bandwidth for more things with video and stuff and independent creation. I mean, more and more, we are a nation of people just making dick jokes for 2 hours, really. And that's kind of what I think this movie would have been. And my guess is it would have reviewed kind of averagely. It wasn't going to come away with a 98% tomato rating. It was going to do okay. And it would probably make some money and do all right, but it wasn't going to be this legendary moment. And now it is. And that's all just so weird to me. You know, the Seth Rogen movie, the guy from Freaks and Geeks and the other guy from Freaks and Geeks now have the most infamous film moment in probably the history of film.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, don't ever try to take my dick joke movies away from me.
I know, you're an American, damn it.
You'll take those away from my cold dead hands. Right.
I'm glad you said hands.
Yeah.
That was nicely done.
I had a thought after that and I kind of forgot.
Oh, anyway. Shoot. Well, a good dick joke always takes away thoughts.
I'll leave us on this note. It's going to be historically interesting to see how the interview is viewed, given that it really is an... You know, it's a comedy. It's not meant to be high art. It's not, for instance, Death of a President, which was about the assassination of a living sitting president. Much more controversial.
Yeah.
It is pretty rare that a movie depicts the assassination of a current or living, even living world leader. But this was not the most poignant or, you know, pointed political commentary.
No,
it was, you know, it was meant as a farce.
Sure.
And I would say to that point, though, that I think satire has been the basis of political commentary for all democracies. Right.
Sure.
Because it's always making fun of people in power and that kind of thing. You know?
Yeah. And it's important point. And it's an important thing to have. And to then have Paramount get nervous and skittish and say, oh, we better cancel those showings of Team America that we were going to substitute in some of those theaters and even the independent theaters like the Alamo Drafthouse is like, I guess we're not going to show that.
Also, any movie with the name Kim
right,
in it.
Right. So
starring anyone named Kim.
We did this on the morning show. We started thinking of all the movies that have some kind of negative view of North Korea. And we came up with James Bond movies and we came up with just a handful of other movies. And I'm, you know, part of me is like, well, who's going to tell me I can't watch that on my Blu-ray player? And at what point does this? And then I start realizing I'm getting roped into this ridiculous conversation. So in the past, it was the dictator and Charlie Chaplin. And that was really controversial because he was making fun of the Fuhrer during the height of that whole conflict. And
I've been seeing people post pictures of the great dictator online. And I do bristle at that because he did say afterwards that had he known about the concentration camps, he said, I would never have made that movie.
Yeah, because nobody really knew in 41. Or
just to throw that bit out there, because it just makes me a little uncomfortable because it wasn't a FU, you know, in that regard.
But up till now, what's been the most controversial film ever? Ishtar, because it made no money? Was it Indiana Jones, because it forced PG-13 ratings? Like,
right.
What was the big...
Last Temptation of Christ, or what's the Mel Gibson one?
The other Jesus one.
Those are usually the ones.
Yeah. Those are it. And then occasionally you'll get something like, freaking Showgirls brought about the NC-17, you know, some other like sex controversy. But nothing has quite reached this level of like societal. Well, maybe some of this. And Tom, this is where Tom usually lands.
We've never had one country, and allegedly, right, according to the FBI today, one country cause a movie company to withdraw its movie from another country's distribution, right? It's one thing for China to say, nope, you're not releasing that one in our country. That's, you know, that's a different matter. But this was a group, let's not even say North Korea, a group forcing the hand of a large entertainment company to not release a movie they wanted to release.
Yeah.
However, we do know, though, that scripts now are commonplace to tweak them to be more acceptable to Chinese audiences. Mm-hmm. I mean, actual storyline tweaks, not just, hey, let's set this in Beijing or whatever like that. Let's have a Asian hero or something like that. That's been happening for years.
Box office potential of China, though, has
absolutely.
It's kind of the number two territory after the U.S. right now, as far as box office returns go these days.
Mm. Yeah, it's an economic.
Actually, you know what? I regret even bringing that up because Eric's right. That's a totally different situation. I retract. Oh, so I'm going to be quiet for 3 seconds. just.
Amazing. 3 seconds.
Yes, I'm back.
Penalty served.
Time served. All right. Well, we could go on all day probably about Sony, but I really want to also hear about the insanity that you're about to express to me about how the universe might actually work. And I'm about to freak out.
Yeah, this one will blow your mind. Deepa Singh pointed out a Blaster article. Julian Barber at the University of Oxford has proposed a theory that says a low entropy early universe is inevitable because of gravity. And there's lots of math and physics behind this that we're not going to go into today or ever. But ultimately, that's what gives time its arrow. And here's the part that is extra going to blow your mind. It exploded in two directions. One, where time runs the opposite from ours. So to them, we live in their deepest past and we're living backwards.
So are we living backwards or are they?
Depends on which person you're talking to.
It's relative. It, just like, you know, in space, the movement is relative, right?
Yeah.
In fact, you know, that's always been sort of a mind blower. It's been difficult for me to grasp the idea of not knowing even if you're moving when you're in space. And then I went into, have you ever been to an isolation tank?
It's
crazy, right? So I went in, and then what they do is they fill it's a pitch black room. Sometimes they're just like little pods, but I was in a fairly big room about the size of a large bathroom, and it's completely pitch black. It's soundproofed, and they fill the water with tons of salt to float. Now the thing is when I was floating, its body temperature, I had no sensation of movement even when I was moving. So what I would do is I would push my toes against one wall and have no idea I was moving until my head bumped against the other wall.
Oh, weird.
That's awesome.
And that's when I grasped like what it's like, what relative movement is like.
Mm.
Yeah.
And when I was trying to wrap my brain around this idea, I'm thinking, you know, so and correct me if you think I'm getting this wrong, because it is, you know, whoa. but the idea I think is that so we are moving in a certain direction in time. And they are moving in the opposite direction. So it's not like the teacup is reassembling itself on their table, but it's just we're going in opposite directions, like two trains, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the impression I got. Now, I don't think it's that they're born as old people and then Benjamin Button everything all the time. I think it's just that time's arrow in their universe would look backward from our universe. At least that's the impression I got. And I could be wrong about that too.
So like, here's what's killing me then. Like at what point do these universes intersect, if at all?
Well, at the Big Bang. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. The origin.
That's the only point.
Oh. So if that's the case, so let me throw this out there. And Eric, maybe you can chime in on this thing. If I'm reading a Japanese magazine, they do it backwards, right? The magazine reads from, instead of reading left to right, it goes right to left.
Japanese say you do it backwards.
Well, they do. And so here's the example, right? This is kind of why this is able to settle in my brain and not be totally confusing, because I realize that's a weird thing in a world where other things can be backwards or forwards or whatever, but it's kind of a good analogy. And it's like that. They start at this point. Imagine a white piece of paper that went on forever. And at the center point of this paper, you just went those two different directions. One went negative zero, but to them that was, they're just facing the other way, and the other guys went the other way. If we did intersect, somehow one of us plopped into the other, would I suddenly reverse my direction? Would I just go their way? Would I get younger?
I imagine you'd just be torn apart by the travel. But yeah, no, it's a fair question. Like, would perception change if you could move from one side to the other? I have no idea.
Because we just perceive it the way we perceive it because that's all we know. We're a fish in a fishbowl. So, Eric, your thoughts, sir?
No, I just think it's great that, like, all these things that were kind of science fiction just maybe 10, 15 years ago are now being, you know, pushed as science facts or almost science fact, or at least science theory, or at least probable. It's like, you know, like a couple of years ago, I heard that there was this physicist found computer code in in the equations that express our reality. And he found actual literal computer code and string theory equations. And obviously that kind of, you know, that brings up the idea that maybe we're living in a simulated universe. And it's just kind of funny that these actual, you know, guys with a lot of, you know, accredited physicists and scientists are kind of looking at this kind of science fiction-y idea and pushing it as possible fact. It kind of blows my mind that we're living in this age and all this information is coming out. We're just now discovering this stuff, and it's like dark matter and all this stuff. And, you know, we're learning more about black holes, and it's kind of amazing that we're living in this time.
I love it. Yep. Sometimes I think that before we move on, I just want to say this thing about the way that our science fiction works. I feel like that it is a sign, like a signpost of man's evolution towards higher thinking. It's our little baby steps in imagining what could be and then working it down to what it actually is and then finding that it's not that far off. And then that's kind of inspiring. So we kind of go those directions harder and we lean into that more. And I've always had this theory that our best science fiction really is just human beings striving to get their minds in a place where they can truly start to grasp what these things are. If you would have told, like a kid, if you'd have told me this whole thing today when I was a kid, I wouldn't have gotten it at all. You tell me now, I kind of can sort of get it. Somebody who's 20, totally get it. You know what I mean?
You know, there's a little happy note buried in that paper too. Possibly, if I'm extrapolating correctly, because, you know, the heat, have you heard of the heat death of the universe, right?
I have heard of that.
That's when, all energy is eventually going to all smooth out and even out, and then time will stop because nothing will change. Actually, I heard the most elegant definition of time I've ever heard was this guy named Guy Murchie. He was a sort of philosopher in the 60s. He said that time is the relationship of things to themselves. If you try to apply that, it's so beautifully elegant because, like, here I am right now at this point in time. Now here I am again a couple seconds later. My position molecules have changed and all that. And time is the expression of one state to the other, that movement, whether it's in a smooth movement or frames, doesn't matter. Mm. So the idea that the heat death, the entropy is going to continue to increase means that everything's going to stop. But this paper says if it's true, that because it made a reference to not just the Big Bang, but many Big Bangs occurring throughout the universe. So if it's true that it's creating Big Bangs that create time going in another direction, that actually the heat death of the universe will never happen because you've got this sort of anti-universe. You've got expansions and contractions in both universes that are always going to be dynamic. And now I have exceeded my intellectual capacity to continue that line. But I mean, I did pick up on this little reference to, you know, it means that fear we have that everything's going to, you know, even out and stop actually will never happen.
Might save us.
Well,
yay.
Now, from the sublime to the, if not ridiculous, at least slightly mundane in comparison, Archmo let us know Amazon launched Prime Now, 1 hour delivery option for Prime members in Manhattan. Need your paper towels in an hour? The service is accessible via a dedicated Prime Now app for iOS and Android between 6 a.m. and midnight, 7 days a week. 1 hour delivery costs $8, but if you're an Amazon Prime member, you get 2 hour delivery for free.
So only feasible, I would assume, in the big city sort of arrangement for now.
Right? Yeah, they say they're going to roll out to additional cities in 2015. But I think that means cities, not just like L.A., New York, Chicago.
You could see it in, you know, Atlanta. There are cities I could see this totally working in. A certain Seattle would be great. Salt Lake maybe, Denver maybe. You know, like some of these places
Omaha.
Maybe. But you're never going to be like
Argo
in the middle of nowhere and hope to get that thing in an hour. There's no way that's going to happen. But it's interesting.
Not I mean, the drones.
Yeah, they're.
Yeah,
I still
on the drone.
I'm pro drone on the delivery thing. I don't know about you guys.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just like the coolness factor.
Yeah. that just to know that that copy of, you know, Grand Theft Auto came through from a hover robot. Yeah, it's an amazing idea.
Yeah. And I really need AA batteries, and I need them in an hour.
Right. You know,
I can't go to the local Walgreens.
I don't want to be a total downer here, but I did see, like, some guy the other day tweeted, like, he showed this giant box and had four AAA batteries, and it's like, look at this giant box and all this packaging for four AAA batteries. I'm thinking, dude, you had it flown to you,
yeah,
and then driven to your doorstep. You know what I mean? And yeah. And if you've read about how Amazon employees work, it's hell in those warehouses, right?
The German Amazon warehouse is on strike right now for that,
right? Yeah. And like, you really want them to stop and think, what's the best box? No, they're going to grab the one that's nearest to them, right? And what worries me about this, you know, it's so convenient, it's so fantastic, but at the same time, it comes at a price. We just don't necessarily see it.
You're right. It's the sausage being made, and we don't know how.
Yeah,
it's being
and
made.
Those cars are going to have to park somewhere. And if you are a delivery person and you've got 50 deliveries to make in 3 hours. You know, you are going to, you know, there's a price out there and we're just not going to see it. And so I just feel a little like sometimes
if people are going to complain, if people are going to complain about waste and packaging, they need to go to Costco and look at that giant, like 6 foot by 4 foot card that they put an SD card in the middle of and sell it to you that way.
Oh, that blister pack.
It's insane. Yeah. Yeah. Like a little 4 gig blister pack in the middle of that thing. You barely even see the card. But it's just this huge SanDisk thing with this giant cardboard plastic waste of time. And
I ought to call them slice my wrist packs because almost what I do every time I try to open
those
one.
Those are bad. Don't do that.
How much blood is lost from blister pack every year? They should really calculate that.
I want to know that number. Yeah. Let's do a study.
Why not?
Star Fury Zeta sent us the Slash Film Report that Columbia Pictures has released 5 new teaser posters for the upcoming video game sci-fi comedy Pixels. If you haven't heard, that's a movie about a group of video game experts who are recruited by the military to fight giant 1980s era video game characters like Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, and Centipede who are rampaging through major world cities. Yes, you guessed it. It stars Adam Sandler as a video game champion from the 1980s. Peter Dinklage and Josh Gad are in it, too, as old school arcaders. And the president is former mall cop and King of Queens, Kevin James, which might be more terrifying than the city of Paris being attacked by space invaders, which also happens. The movie comes out July 24th.
I'm actually kind of excited because I know this sounds crazy to even say that, but it's Columbia Pictures, by the way, a Sony joint. Yeah. It is... you know, despite what you may think about some of the actors involved, whatever, they can make me laugh. I'm not worried about that. But isn't this whole thing based on that Pixels short thing that was on YouTube? Like, yeah, that's true, right? Now, if that's the case, that thing blew my mind at the time with all of its sort of voxely big, giant, pixelated destruction. If that's the basis for this and they kind of are true to that, and just build some story around it, that sounds all right. I'm okay.
All right. You know? I haven't seen the short, so I mean, as soon as I heard Adam Sandler, that's when I decided I was not going to be into this movie.
Right, it's so easy to check out. Well, yeah, but Peter Dinklage was in Elf, and I guess that movie's all right. But
did you see him in The Station Agent?
He's amazing in that.
Yeah,
he's
brilliant in that movie. Oh my god,
such a great movie. But he's also terrible in Destiny, the video game.
Right, I don't know. The Dink being in a movie doesn't balance out the Sandler.
The Dink. That's amazing.
I know, the only way this couldn't work for me is if the screen was completely blank. I love the idea.
It's a great idea.
What did they want? Do you just throw quarters at them?
Well, that's what they wanted when I lived in the 80s. But what are all these? Well, the question is, who's writing it? Who's producing it? Is this Adam Sandler's joint? Is this one of his things?
Yeah.
Then I'm less excited. If it's Sandler being hired and all these other guys being hired to do this thing.
If only we had an interconnected network of computers in which we could look up such information
Tom,
for you.
You're such a dreamer. You're such a dreamer.
What is this pie in the sky? Blah, blah, blah.
I like Josh Gad. I think he's funny.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he replaced Jonah Hill Jonah Hill declined to be in this movie, and they were like, oh, just get Josh Gad.
Yeah, Jonah Hill.
Timothy Dowling and Tim Herlihy are the main writers on it. Chris Columbus is directing.
Oh,
Michelle Monaghan's in it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And she was hilarious in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah.
And, she's a great comedian.
Chris Columbus is
Sean Bean has a part.
Whoa, Sean Bean's, and he probably dies. Here's the thing, though. Chris Columbus, he did two of the Harry Potters. He's got, I think he did one or two of the Home Alone movies, maybe not the ones we like. He was kind of a John Hughes protege. He's all right. Yeah. He's okay. So, sure. Why not?
Yeah, he's all right.
I'm in.
Although the first two Harry Potters are probably the weakest Harry Potters.
That's true. But they are also the weakest of the books. So it's difficult. I don't know. I'm willing to put a little money on that this is going to be a big hit, though. If we do a summer movie draft that year, or assume we will this next year, that would be one I would try to get. Because regardless of how I feel about Sandler movies, those things make crazy money.
It's going to hinge on the visual effects, too.
Yeah. And if it's like that short, we're in for a treat. And if the movie plays like that terrible Adam Sandler movie where they're all friends from high school or whatever, what are those called? I forget. Best friends or whatever.
Yeah.
We're all dead. That's going to
be old. Guys. Quick question, though. So I noticed that the movie was budgeted at $110 million. Now, do you think that I kind of was a little disappointed because I wished that maybe it was a scrappier movie, right? Mm. Because then it would, you know, might be a little wackier. Or is that not?
But that's like half the money The Hobbit costs, or the half the money a
right.
Spider-Man movie costs.
It's not necessarily a super huge budget, but sure. I just felt like, oh, because, you know, this is an opportunity to. You know, you wouldn't necessarily need the best visuals because, again, it's 80s, you know, arcade graphics.
You're paying by the voxel, though. Don't forget.
Yeah, it's 2014.
Pay for voxel.
Yeah.
It's PPV.
The PPV this year is outrageous. Yeah. Forget about RAM prices. Forget about those. Yeah. It's all about voxels now. All right.
Anyway. One more attack story, hacker story. Attackers using a spear phishing campaign to compromise a system at ICANN. ICANN is, of course, the organization that maintains things like the domain name system. Attackers got access to blogs, a wiki, the Whois portal, as well as what sounds worse than it is, admin access to all the files stored in the centralized zone data system that's used by the registries to manage the allocation of domain names. This access did not include the ability to alter the data. It's just a place to look at data. But that did allow the attackers to view things like names, postal addresses, email addresses, fax and phone numbers, usernames, and worst of all, passwords, although the passwords were hashed cryptographically, but they immediately told everyone, you want to change all of your passwords now, anybody who used that system. So it's, you know, it's not the first time ICANN's been hacked, and they're a huge target. Talk about somebody that the attackers are always trying to get into. But yeah, kind of a bad day for ICANN.
As a matter of practicality, would people with a bunch of domains on GoDaddy or Hover or whatever, are they subject to wanting to get out there?
No, this is the usernames and personal details of people involved in assigning top level domains. It shouldn't have any effect whatsoever on your average registrant, the registrar.
So if I was Dirty Paul and I was the one that suggested the XXX domain, I should be worried about my information.
If you're operating the XXX domain,
as Dirty Paul, got it. All right.
As what? Any Paul?
No offense to any Pauls.
Clean, dirty, marginally smudged.
And that's exactly what he'd say if he wanted us to believe he wasn't Dirty Paul.
That's right. Wouldn't he, though?
I see what you did there.
Yeah. Or would he? Because maybe he, it starts to get real deep. Real quick, we've got a thing written down here that says New Year's resolutions for nerds. And I know that this was placed there by our good friend Logan Decker, who is now a guest on the show. And Logan, I like this idea a lot. So I think it'd be fun if we kind of rapid fire style. All of us had one thing this year that we wanted to get back on our nerd card, that we wanted to have as a thing that happened in 2015 and we've been putting off in kind of a nerdy way. And for me, it would be watch Doctor Who finally.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Ooh. I've been way bad about that. So that's me. Eric, where are you at? What do you want to do?
Oh, buy less games on Steam and play more of them.
I was having that problem today with the sale today. It's like, gosh dang it. I own six of these. What am I doing?
That's the first one that's going to fall. The first.
Yeah. I mean, I'm finally playing Brothers, for example. I got on Steam last year, forgot about it, never played it, got it on sale, heard amazing things, never played it. Finally picked it up the other night. Completely enamored with that game. It's amazing. And I should have played it when it came out. So, yeah, good one. Good one for sure. Logan, what do you think? What are you doing?
You know, so on my Twitter feed, I'm always nagging people every month to back up, you know, and I just in all kinds of ways, you know, did you back up your cloud services? Did you back up this? Blah, blah, blah. I just lost 4 terabytes to a Drovo.
No.
Because I thought, because, you know, one of the reasons I had it is because you can even, I mean, drill boards are kind of amazing. You pull one drive out and it's unfazed. It just starts shifting everything around. But I relied on that one thing. And some, it wasn't necessarily the Drobo's fault, but I was trying to transfer four drives to a new Drobo. Things went wrong, blah, blah, blah. So my New Year's resolution is to be better about, like, to set up a backup program and to make sure that the things that are really valuable to me are separated from the things that are not so valuable, and just to archive them, you know, on a regular basis. It's not the most glamorous resolution, but there's so much stuff in there that was valuable to me. And I want to preserve it. And unlike, you know, like when my parents passed away, there was so much stuff they had that was, you know, my childhood, you know? And the thing is, the digital stuff is not going to preserve itself like that. It's not going to be handed down through boxes. We have to, you know, take on that actively, you know, preserve them if we want to hold on to them.
Yeah. Good idea. Back them up, guys.
Yeah.
Tom, what do you say, man?
I want to read more comics this year. I didn't have enough time to read series. I barely kept up on The Walking Dead, and that's kind of the only one that I read. I did a little bit of Irredeemable earlier in the year, and I did knock off Infinity Gauntlet at one point. But I want to get back into it, to reading a lot more comics.
I'm just going to recommend that you read the book I totally avoided because it seemed like a dumb gimmick to me, but turns out is maybe my favorite thing I've read in years, and that is Gotham Central. Nothing to do with the TV show Gotham, but I wish the TV show Gotham had something more to do with the comic, because the comic is amazing. Extremely well written, well drawn, well done thing. Right. It's like a procedural set in that city. Amazing characters. It's from the point of view of the police department. Batman is a nuisance to these people. It is amazing. Really, that's really great. Well done. Yeah.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I have to recommend Lock and Key too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Lock and Key is great.
Scott Snyder Batman series.
Oh yeah. That's
excellent.
Yep.
And also the Brian Michael Bendis, I think it's called All New X-Men or New X-Men. Mm. It's fantastic.
That is that's the current run, isn't it?
It's where they brought the original five X-Men to the present.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, that sounds cool.
I've read this first issue and then got behind, but that was awesome, even just that. So totally, yeah. Totally good recommendation. All right, we're going to take a jump into something real fun that we do each and every week, and that is called the Pop Quiz, and here it is.
America scores and wins.
All right, this is our chance for you to be tested. Both Eric and Logan have no idea what their topic is, but it is in areas of their expertise. The way this contest works is we ask them a series of 8 questions each. They will each take a turn doing their full set of questions. Tom will score the whole thing in a totally psycho way that makes no sense. And if you get one right, you hear this. If you get it wrong, you hear this. It's either ding or buzz. And we're going to start with Eric. Eric, are you ready for your questions?
I'm ready for my 1 of 8 questions. Yes.
Here are all 8 of your questions. And they are, by the way, your area of focus is The Watchmen. The Watchmen. I know you're a fan. At least according to Tom.
All I said was Eric and I stood in line to see The Watchmen when it came out.
Yeah.
Together.
I am making a big leap from that.
Oh, look at that. Yeah. He's got it right there.
Wait a minute. Is this within the rules? Look, he's
know.
Got that.
I don't know. We need you to hand that to a third party quickly.
I'm gonna
All right, here goes. Your first question.
All right.
What is the name of the group of heroes in Watchmen?
The Minutemen.
Very correctly done. Nicely done. Seems like an easy one, but there it is. Next one. What mob boss tries to kill Rorschach when they are in prison?
Oh, man. He's a big guy.
Yeah.
What is his name? Oh, man. He's in the movie.
He sure is.
I'm blanking. I don't know.
All right. It is Big Figure.
I'm going to give you a quarter point. You're getting a quarter point because it sounded a little like Scott said Horseshack, and you might have been confused that it was a welcome back Cotter.
I didn't say Horseshack, did I? Did I? No, I didn't.
No, you said Rorschach, but I could see the confusion possibly.
All right, see, I told you.
So what's the appeals process here?
You can submit your appeals in writing with a fountain pen in black ink to the following address. Yeah. Next question.
Expect 6 to 8 weeks to respond.
To my butt.
Here is the next question. It is this. What member of the Minutemen died in a bank robbery in the 1940s?
Oh.
This reminds me how much I love the names of these characters.
Yes, he was in the revolving door, that thing.
Mm-hmm.
He got shot.
Yep.
Because he got caught. His cape got caught in there.
He sure did.
See, I know all the details, but not the details that matter. That's the story of my life, by the way.
Perfect. Any guesses?
Oh, I can't remember their names.
All right.
I'm blanking on their names.
It is Dollar Bill.
Dollar Bill.
Dollar Bill. It's fantastic.
Dollar Bill,
y'all. Yep.
Dollar Tom,
any nothing weird there? We're good.
He gets 0.05 of a point knowing details bonus.
Ah, look at that. We haven't had one of those in a while. Up next, who was the original Night Owl? The name of the character.
See, I'm terrible with names. he is the current Night Owl's friend. He's an old guy. Yeah. And in the movie, they cut out his part. And then for the special edition, the director's cut, for the ultimate edition, they brought that back. Hollis Mason.
You are correct. Nicely done.
We would have also accepted Night Owl.
You guys are terrible.
No, we wouldn't have. All right. Next up, what years were the Watchmen comics originally printed?
85.
You are so close. 86.
Oh, 86, isn't it?
We would have taken 86 to 87, or 87 would have been fine, but yeah, 86, 87.
So you get a millionth of a point bonus for being 1 year off.
Yeah, pretty good there.
But wasn't that daylight savings year, too? So...
If
I recall, yeah.
It was a leap year. Yeah, that.
That confuses it. So now it's a hundredth of a point.
Well, which universe are we in? If we're going backwards, this all bets are off. Next one. What objects does Jonathan Osterman repair for his girlfriend, Janie?
Watch.
You are, correct. Nicely done. Nicely done. Right. Who is the president of the United States in the Watchmen universe at the time?
Richard Nixon.
You are correct as well. Oh, I forgot about that, actually. That's funny.
Yeah.
That's dumb that
I forgot.
That's
the only one I've known so far.
Who was it in? Oh, I'm thinking of Dark Knight. It's Reagan. That's who I'm thinking of. All right. Final question. What is Ozymandias' real name? Ozymandias.
Veidt. What's his first name?
We might let it go with just the one, don't you think, Tom? I don't know.
I forgot his first name.
All right, here, let's see. I'm going to give you I'm going to allow it. Adrian Veidt.
Adrian,
I think remembering the hard last name.
He's going to get a half point.
Okay, fair enough. Okay.
Half the answer.
Now, Logan.
Hey, Tom and Scott, what are your PayPal addresses? No. It's just a gratuity.
Sure, I understand. Just tips, sure.
Yeah, it has nothing, you know.
Mine is totally unrelated to current geek bribes at gmail.com.
Got it. All right.
Is Logan Tread Lightly at gmail.com.
I'm just throwing it out there. That's all.
I understand. It was totally unrelated.
Yeah, just something you've been meaning.
Nothing to do with this episode or anything. It's just... Here's the opportunity. We're all online. Why not ask? All right, here we go. Logan Decker, your questions are all about 1990s PC games.
All right, bring it on.
All right, your editorship comes to bear here. Here we go. Who is the villain of the Fallout series?
Oh, God.
I'll give you a hint. It's an acronym. Or initialism, depending on how you want to call it.
Oh, God. No, I'm not going to get it.
No way. All right, here we go. It is Shodan, Sentient Hyper Optimized Data Access Network, the Shodan.
Wait. No, that's System Shock.
He's got it as Fallout. Uh-oh. Do we have a dispute?
I get 5,000 points.
Hold on. That's Shodan.
System Shock.
I'm going to look this up. Shodan. It is a fictional intelligence mainframe. Oh, my gosh. It is System Shock. He screwed up. These aren't my questions, by the way.
50,000 points.
Tom, how do you want to rule that one?
I think he just gets the question right. Plus a third of a point entertaining regret bonus.
All right. Next up, what company developed Myst, MYST, Myst?
Cyan.
You are. Come on. Whoops. Correct. Nicely done. That's a good one.
I actually No, I don't know that for sure. Sorry.
All right.
When I was a kid, I think I lived across the street from two of them. Did you, 14th Street.
Did you click over there and push a button to see what would happen?
No, I don't even remember.
They were never home. They were in puzzles in their house.
They were never there.
I can't even remember. Okay, sorry.
There was just a weird sundial you had to try to remember how to turn. Yeah. Next one. What year was SimCity 2000 released?
'98.
You are 4 years off. It is 1994.
Wow.
The year my dog was born. How weird is that? All right.
You get 4/100ths of a point for being 4 years
Pretty
old.
Pretty good deal. What is the name of the first episode of the original Doom?
Oh, God.
I actually knew this one, which I was proud. I played a lot of Doom.
I can actually feel this weird mind-fogging force field coming from Eric. I feel it right now. He's doing this. I can prove it.
Oh, you're blaming him, are you? Okay.
It's
Eric's old mind fog trick.
No, I want Eric to prove he's not doing it. Okay, I'm not. I'm totally blanking on that one.
All right. Well, you also really illustrated part of my problem with today's internet and the way people think, because your description of how he might be mind fogging you and it's up to him to prove that he isn't hit a nerve for some reason. That reminds me of how trolls work. Anyway,
I think that is entirely reasonable.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, sounds reasonable to me.
But you would be wrong. It is knee deep in the dead is the correct answer.
You're going to lose 3/10 of a point mind fog blaming penalty.
All right, next up. Who was the designer of the LucasArts adventure game Full Throttle?
Tim Schafer.
You are correct. Nicely done. Wasn't he in charge?
I should have made like a dramatic pause or something like that.
Something,
sorry.
But that's fine. It was kind of an easy one. What was the original Fallout? When was the original Fallout released?
90.
We mean Fallout this time, right?
96, you say? 96. Oh, 97. 1 year off.
Ah,
one
close.
Year off.
Close.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for
supporting. Yeah, 1/100th of a point for being close.
97 was good.
Eric knows what I'm going through right now.
Yeah, he feels your pain. He feels your pain. Next up, what word is first city? What word is the? I guess he means the. What word is the first city you have access to in the original Grand Theft Auto? What word? I guess what is the name of the first city you have access to in the original Grand Theft Auto? This is the original top-down 2D business.
Yeah. And I feel like we went back there. We went back there at it. Was not. Oh God! Can't you just pull my fingernails out? Because that would be actually less uncomfortable.
We're not allowed. We're not allowed.
Okay. All right.
All right. So you don't.
No, I got it. No, Los Santos.
Incorrect. It is Liberty City.
Liberty
City.
Ah!
Yeah, yeah, I know, right? Seems like.
All right,
it
but you're
obvious.
Getting 4/10 of a point for requesting torture.
Tom gets very excited about when people request torture.
Yeah, it's the rules. Right?
Could I please have waterboarding? All right. Final question is, what is the best capture the flag map in the original Unreal Tournament? I'll give you a hint. The whole thing was floating in space. I guess we're all floating in space technically. But
and I would get picked off every time I jumped.
Yep.
You
know the one. I can feel it.
I know, because I died 100,000 times.
Yeah, my redeemer is trying to find you now on that other side.
And we had it in our house. Our entire house was constructed on hardwired land
just to play this map. I was there. I've been there.
I can't pull it up.
It is Facing Worlds. I know that was a painful one because I could tell you knew it. I don't know how Tom wants to play with that one, but yeah.
People are sadists. This is sick.
All right, Tom. So now.
Well, I was going to give him a half point almost knowing it, and then I had to take away a half point for calling a sadist. So it's kind of washed.
It's just a wash. It's a wash. All right. So how did they do? Let's score them up.
At the very end, we have Logan with 3.483 repeating. Mm.
Of course.
And Eric with 4.81.
Eric, wow. Congratulations, sir. You've done it.
Now, wait a minute. If mine is repeating, then it goes on forever. So technically, isn't that a bigger number?
Listen.
We can't ever decide, right?
Plus, it's going in the opposite way. It's going lower. So tough.
Well
break,
done, Eric.
Everybody.
Well done. I'll send you a bag of dill pickle chips.
Yeah, please. There you go.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm still disappointed in my performance because I should have known those questions.
That's the sign of a true champion.
Yeah. Being disappointed in
back.
How you did.
Work harder.
Yeah. I just want to thank my parents. I want to thank Jesus. All that
stuff. Shots.
That was a Key and Peele skit I saw yesterday where they had the guys like, no, children, you can fly.
Yeah.
Get up on the top of your house right now.
Brilliant. Yeah. All right. Well, it is time for this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
This is a quick little segment that used to be an entire show called Forecast. It's where we predict the future, sometimes in geeky, nerdy science fiction ways, sometimes in very cold, dark, terrible ways. Logan, you had a bunch of ideas. Do you want to pick your favorite from the ones you put in here, man?
Well, it seems kind of obvious, but I would say that I think the Oculus Rift is going to transform the world in ways that we have not even begun to appreciate yet. And it's going to happen extremely, extremely fast. And I think that that VR is actually going to have as much, if not more, an impact on our daily lives as the web.
Mm.
When I think about VR, I think about suddenly there's no reason you can't attend a lecture at Harvard anymore. Sure, you can download a lot of these classes online and all that, but now there's no restriction in the number of students you can have and how much, you know, how ubiquitous accessible education could be for everybody. Mm. You know, with VR, you can go to the Taj Mahal. With VR, you can be and see from a reporter's perspective, you know, what a conflict zone looks like.
Well, how quickly do we go, though, from the big clunky thing that it is now and will be for, you know, a few years anyway, until we get to a place where they're small, light, maybe even implanted, maybe wirelessly transmitted to our brains or however far you want to take it.
4 years.
You give it 4 years before. Yeah,
when do we take
very,
that magic
very, very
leap?
Fast.
That's fast. I don't know.
Magic leap.
I think it's too fast. I think
because it won't necessarily just be VR per se, right? Because what's her name? Jerry Ellsworth.
Cast AR, right?
Right, Cast AR. You know, so that's the other manifestation of it, where you put the glasses on and it projects on a surface, like which is the classic Star Wars chess thing, right?
Right.
It brings people together in a way and gives us sort of a sensory experience that I feel like we've lost when, you know, in our shift to conversing with each other online, where everything is quick, quick, quick. Why? It's headlines, it's speed, it's alacrity.
Mm.
With VR, it is more, it's immersion, it's sensuality, it's, you know, direct information sort of going into your head.
Mm. And it's isn't it the great challenge? You keep hearing those guys at Oculus and others talk about it. The sense of place, that's the big challenge,
absolutely.
Right? Making you feel
and
like you're
I
there.
I don't think you can underestimate the impact it's going to have in our society. And I think that's why Facebook got a bargain at $1 billion for this thing, because they know it's not just about, you know, it's not just about gaming. It's just that games, technology and games pushes everything forward.
Yeah,
you know, because there's so much money in it. There's so much innovation and creativity. But Facebook is thinking, you know what? Why have, you know, everybody go into a Facebook feed when you can hang out with your friends, you know, and people in, you know, like Facebook groups, you know, have all these groups of people with similar interests, you know, now you can be together in the same virtual theater, in the same room, in the same exposition center, going to, you know, the same places, archaeological digs, whatever. The possibilities are just overwhelm me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think only second. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was just going to say, you saying that right there made me realize that Facebook buying Oculus VR could be the equivalent of if Microsoft had bought Netscape in 1990.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like
exactly.
If they had said, oh, crap, that's where we're going to need to be. Let's own them now.
And that would have been the perfect alignment for them at that time and place, right?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Eric,
so this is the call that Facebook is making.
Sure. And where's your head at on this, Eric? I can tell you that it still makes me a little dizzy and sick to use it. Do you think we get over that and we get to this place that Logan's describing?
Yeah, well, I think as soon as there's a convincing sex simulation for VR, I think that's when that's when it hits critical mass. I mean, seriously, what was that movie?
VHS one.
What was that movie? Strange Days. That in there.
Yeah.
Caprica dealt with that a little bit, I think. That movie, that TV show, Caprica, the short-lived TV show. Prequel. When I think about VR and I think about what's the first thing people are really going to want to do when it's really convincing, I think of having online virtual sex.
Yeah, you're probably right, because most of these technological advancements we ever have seem to be, they surround other human, basic kind of primal human needs. And whatever those may be, it's to communicate, it's to reproduce or simulate it. Or, you know, myriad of other things. We need to eat. We need to reproduce. Those are basically our two main things. And everything else seems to attach to that in some way. So all of our other media sort of has done that. Why not this? I think you're probably right. I mean, it sounds like a joke, but I actually really think it's true.
No, I don't think it's a joke at all.
Yeah.
In fact, I have a question for Eric. Do you think that what do you think the real tipping point for that would be? Would it be when you can have sort of this virtual, you know, like you've got your VR glasses on and maybe you've got haptic sensors and all that? Or is it when you actually can tap in somehow to your brain's chemistry and get this sort of endorphin rush you would get from kissing somebody, touching, holding, and, you know, the big O, blah, blah, blah. what do you think is will be like, I mean, do you?
I think you're hitting the nail, really. I think it's right there as soon as, and I think that's coming sooner than we think. Sorry, I couldn't think of another one.
I swear to God,
we did not get together ahead of time to plan that one out.
That was even better as impromptu. No, but I think you're totally right. And the idea that it then expands kind of from there. We get the basic whatever needs taken care of, and then it goes from there to become something more. And the future of media and communication and entertainment and even podcasting, if you want to talk about how everyone wants to talk about how podcasting is back. There'll be a day when these things are ubiquitous, easy, small, implantable, on our face, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we're doing this, or people with something to say and people who want to hear what that person has to say will be able to be in the same space and do that repeatedly and walk around the thing they've already seen four times, but sit in a different chair or see it from a different angle or perhaps interact in a way that we haven't even thought of yet, that's dynamic. And that's all very exciting. I'm stoked about that entire future.
You know, the sensory stimulation part of this is something that we've really only touched the surface. In other words, like, there's a lot of things with haptic feedback and everything, but I think Logan hit on something important. Like, there needs to be a development that really tricks your neural receptors into not just touch, but taste, sense, you know, smell. And I think when you can reliably simulate that you're eating something like a hamburger, that is like when VR has gone over the top.
Well,
and then of course, if you can do that, that means that it can also be manipulated and you can be fooled. And that's a brave new
space. Bracing. Yeah. It's a little bit bracing, right? Also, I think about it this way. Let's talk about Sony Hacker just one last moment here. Imagine a future where the product is the interview, but it's an interactive experience where we walk around within the story. We interact with the actors in the story because that's what VR lets us do in the future. And that gets hacked. And we are so overstimulated or whatever in the experience that it leaves us dead. Now, that reminds me of another movie about VR that was like a cautionary tale, which was that one with Natalie Wood and Brainstorm. Was that
Brainstorm?
It? Yeah, where people got overstimulated and killed as a result, because I can't remember who the nefarious person was doing that. But anyway, people were dying because it was so real that if they experienced death within the virtual world, they would die. And that's an idea that is a little scary, you know. Yeah. I'm not trying to be an alarmist or whatever, but if we get good enough at this stuff, then why the heck not? There's other things like this, though. What else is like? The Matrix, for heaven's sakes. Yeah. Same idea. Yeah,
the holodeck with the safety protocols off.
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good
one.
And
the thing is like when we, you know, when you stimulate or simulate things like haptic stuff and all that, you know, we understand how nerves work, how touch and all that. We know nothing about how the brain works and what manipulating it, you know, what sort of knockoff effects it could have, you know. Mm-hmm. We really don't know what happens when you go in there and start messing and stimulating neurons and blah blah blah.
I know that a space simulation that I did with the Oculus made me terrified and I had to take the thing off.
Right.
Like that's enough to know that my brain at the very least kicks in all of its fight or flight mechanisms. So how much far of a leap is it from that to, you know, actual shutting down of systems or simulating that, oh, you're bleeding out, now shut down all the other organs that we don't need while we're, you know, because your body does that naturally when you have real trauma. So I don't know.
On the other hand, you know, can you imagine like, you know, being able to put on a VR headset and like a veteran who has PTSD and now has accessible therapy by remote, you know, that might also not just be, you know, talk therapy and visual stimuli therapy, but also might, you know, be able to manipulate, you know, the chemical balances in the brain and all that.
Yeah.
You know,
there's so much. Yeah. Good. You're right. It's not all nefarious. There's plenty of good. This is maybe one of my favorite ones. Yes, Eric.
Oh, yeah. Just to bring it back to simulation theory, I did hear, you know, I heard this quote from somewhere. They say that, like, as we get better simulating virtual worlds, as we bring our virtual worlds closer to reality, the chances that we're actually already living in a simulated reality become much higher.
Oh, yeah. That kind of stuff makes my head spin. Yeah, me too.
Nick Bostrom. Yeah.
Let's all enjoy that as the final dark thought as we close out today's episode.
Sorry.
No. Perhaps one of my favorite forecast segments we've done, honestly.
Yeah, good stuff.
That man. Was really, really good. This brings this episode to a close, but man, you guys were rad guests. Very glad both of you were here. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thanks, man. That was fun.
Let's go around the horn real quick. Eric, where can people find you? What are you up to? What's cool for Eric online right now?
Basically my CNET stuff. So you can go to CNET.com or CNET.com/how-to, and you can find a myriad of different how-to videos and articles and slideshows and stuff. And we teach you how to do pretty much everything.
That's awesome. Very cool. Also, Logan, what are you up to? I know you're entering a whole new phase, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, you know, again, I haven't had a break in 15 years. And so now this is my opportunity to take some time off to reset, because you know what publishing has been like in the last 15 years.
Oh my gosh, you've seen the whole gamut, really. Yeah.
Yeah, everything has changed. And especially for somebody at my age, I need a complete fresh reset. Mm. And also there are projects that I want to pursue, especially sort of related to the VR thing. I'm working with brain interfaces and talking to some companies and looking at ways, you know, in which they can be used to, you know, overclock your brain, which I know is a little scary. Mm. Also talking to another woman she's trying to crowdfund an effort to, for example, when we all trade videos online, you know, blind people don't necessarily know what's going on in these. So she wants to crowdfund an effort where, as you're watching them, volunteers can enter descriptions like closed captions. This is what's happening. You know, obviously it's not going to have the full impact of the humor, but it brings, you know, blind people more into the conversation. It's projects like these that I have time now in the next 6 months to talk to people about and explore and also help publicize. Well, so you'll follow me on Twitter.
Active on Twitter that whole time, I guess. So yeah,
absolutely. And I'll be talking about it all. Logan Decker on Twitter.
Nice. Very nice. Awesome. One of us who got our names on Twitter. Very nice indeed. It's an exclusive club.
So close to Logan. Please. Yeah. And I got it in LO and nobody's coming back. All right, that's a story of my life.
Nice. Nicely done. Well, that's going to do it for us. Tom, anything you'd like to say before we embark into these holidays, before we come back?
Just remind people about the calendar, the tech history calendar that you illustrated and I dug up some facts for is still available. Mm-hmm. Go check it out if you need a good wall calendar for the coming year.
Yeah, frogpants.com/store, available now. And it's really the only reason to get a calendar anymore. You got enough devices telling you what day it is. It's just something cool to have up on the wall. You can look at cool tech facts, see some cool cartoon work. Like, what else do you want, man? And it's affordable. That's the other thing. So go check it out, frogpants.com/store. I think that's it. Feedback and calls 801-471-0462 or currentgeek@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter, Ace to Tech, Scott Johnson, and Current Geek. And we're at currentgeek.com. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Logan, for Eric, and for Tom. We'll see you next time.
Later, Gators.
Bye.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we mix all of our favorite things for this holiday season. Toys for Christmas, superheroes, and 50-year-old patent law precedents at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court granted cert this week to decide the Kimball v. Marvel Entertainment case, which involves all of these awesome things. In a 1964 patent case entitled Brulot, the Supreme Court deemed that a patent licensee, who pays a patent owner royalties to be able to manufacture and sell goods covered by the patent, is absolved of any further duties after the patent expires following its normal 20-year term. That doctrine is now directly under fire. Kimball received a patent in 1991 for gloves capable of shooting foam string from the palm, just like Spider-Man. Or as Andrew Allen would put it... Kimball approached Marvel with this idea, and an oral agreement was reached that Marvel would not exploit this idea. However, in 1997, a web blaster toy, which was exactly this type of Spider-Man glove, hit the market from Marvel. Kimball sued for patent infringement and breach of contract, and when he won on the contract claims but lost on the patent claims, the parties settled before appeal. This settlement led Marvel to buy out the patent and pay royalties on all future sales of this type of toy. Despite the patent expiring in 2010, the settlement agreement had no set termination date. A new dispute over this settlement agreement led to another breach of contract lawsuit 2 years ago, and Marvel asked for declaratory judgment in view of the 50-year-old Brulot patent doctrine. Basically, Marvel argued that the now-expired patent rights released Marvel of any further obligations to pay the royalties. The District Court and the Court of Appeals have ruled in favor of Marvel by applying this 50-year-old doctrine. The Supreme Court taking this case means that the status of the Brulot doctrine is unclear at best. This hybrid contract and patent set of facts is the perfect type of case to determine whether expiration of patent rights trump any other contractual agreements to pay royalties for an idea. Though it is clear that patented ideas should go into the public domain after 20 years to keep the patent system working as intended, it's not clear whether this need to put things in the public domain is so strong as to override private contractual agreements between two parties. The bottom line is, I personally expect some minor changes to be implemented to this doctrine for special fact situations just like this, where a contract likely should not be disturbed by a patent expiring. If nothing else, this is another fun and nerdy set of toys and facts to see the Supreme Court grapple with. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.